It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. Today, I am joined by the Federal Managers Association. We're going to talk about the biggest issues facing federal managers and also about the FMA's upcoming convention. And we have joining us on the show today, and I'd like to welcome her, Pat Niehaus, FMA's president. Welcome, Pat.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to be here.
And Pat is busily working away in California, where she has her day job as working in the human resources field, I believe for the Air Force, right, Pat?
That's right.
But spends a great deal of time looking out for federal managers. I also have in the studio Todd Wells, the executive director of FMA. Todd, welcome to Fed Talk.
Hi, Bill. Thank you very much.
And Jesse Clement, the director of governmental affairs. Did I get your title right, Jesse?
Close enough. Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And Jesse's a regular not only on Fed Talk, but on Federal News Radio and throughout the federal community as a spokesperson for federal employees in general and in particular for federal managers. And before we get started, I would like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. If you'd like to talk to us about the challenges facing federal managers and some of the issues that we're going to be talking about, or you want to speak directly to our guests, give us a toll-free call at 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. A little later in the show, we're going to have a real treat. We're going to have call-ins from some of the trainers that the Federal Managers Association Convention is going to feature. They're going to give a preview of some of the very interesting training for federal managers that will be presented. Pat, tell us a little bit about the FMA, the Federal Managers Association, and then we'll get into specifics on your upcoming convention.
Well, Federal Managers Association has been representing the interests of managers in the federal government for almost 100 years. This is our 99th year, so in 2013 we'll celebrate our centennial. So we're very excited about that. We are the oldest management association in the federal government. And we have members and chapters in agencies all across the government, all across the country, in Europe and in the Pacific, in the DOD arena. And I have a national staff in Alexandria, Virginia. Jesse and Todd both work there. Todd runs the office, and Jesse is our government affairs director, as you said. So we have a capital presence. I go back and forth between California and D.C. on a regular basis as the president to participate in the National Labor Management Council and other association business. So we do have a seat as one of two management associations on the council. The other is the Senior Executive Association, as you know. And it's been a really tough year for not only federal managers, but federal employees.
I was just about to ask you, Pat, what some of your big issues are, and so you're getting into that before I even ask. It has been a tough year. What are some of the big issues facing federal managers?
Well, I think that the downsizing is probably the biggest, being hit with cuts that are not always logical or mission-based is the source of biggest frustration that I hear from our members. Being told, well, you've got to take out 10% of your staff, but we're not going to take away 10% of your work. And we're not going to give you any resources that make it easier to work without that 10% of your staff.
Yeah, and in a few minutes, after the first break, we're going to hear from Casey Wilson, one of your presenters, who's actually going to talk about that very topic, how to lead your team with fewer resources. That is a big challenge, and So you know, there are ways to deal with it, but you know, you can't possibly do everything you're supposed to do when your budgets are cut so severely.
No, that's very true. And Todd has worked very hard at putting together a great training panel for us for our national convention next month to cover just that, doing more with less. And so I'm really pleased with the panel he's put together on that.
So, Pat, tell us about who the members of FMA are. How, you know, who would join FMA? Why would you want to join? And how do you join?
FMA members are federal managers throughout the government. You can be a member of a chapter if there's one in your organization. You can start a chapter if there isn't, or you could be a member at large. A member at large deals directly with the national office as opposed to having a chapter to network with and to meet with. Most of our chapters have meetings at least on a monthly basis, some quarterly, but mostly monthly, where all the members have an opportunity to get together. They usually have guest speakers, and then you have a networking opportunity. And they share information among each other, you know, within their organizations. Most of the chapters are installation-specific. We have conferences, for example, in Social Security. We have a Social Security conference where, because the Social Security offices are so spread out, that gives them a chance to interact by phone and by email. Our national office sends out a lot of information. We have a biweekly Washington report that Jesse and her assistant Katie work very hard on to update everyone on what's going on in Washington on a biweekly basis. And I understand some other associations are borrowing a lot of Jesse's work these days.
Well, they certainly are working together with her. She's been a great member of the team of coalition of federal organizations, including labor unions and other management associations that are fighting the anti-federal employee sentiment that seems to keep occurring over and over and over again.
Yeah, and we do feel very fortunate to have Jesse working so hard on that because she does put in a lot of effort into countering the negative climate toward federal employees right now, in Congress especially.
So I assume that in order to be a member of FMA, you have to be a federal manager, supervisor?
You can be an aspiring manager.
Or an aspiring manager.
Yeah, there is a category where aspiring managers can join. Not all chapters have that category, but as a member at large, you can be a member. And it gives them networking opportunities, the ability to meet with managers and you know, possibly get mentors, that kind of thing.
And, Pat, how do you join? How would somebody become a member? The easy way.
The easy way is to go to fedmanagers.org, federalmanagers.org, and there's an online application there.
Okay. And let me turn to Todd for just a minute, because Todd, the executive director, and talk just a little bit about your convention. When is it? What's it going to cover, Todd? I know you've been working hard on putting that convention together.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks for giving us this chance to reach out to the local community and invite all D.C. area supervisors, managers, and executives to come to our day of training.
Well, actually, you know, people can listen to Fed Talk throughout the country.
Well, that's a good
on the
point.
Internet.
I just happen to be sitting here, but thank you. You're right.
And
you're
so
right.
They could come from around the country.
Thanks for pointing that out. You're absolutely right. And we have been reaching out to the entire nation. And as Pat said, we do have folks in the Pacific and Europe as well. So everyone is invited. This is our 74th annual national convention and management training seminar. As Pat said, we're 99 years old this year. We're looking forward to a big to-do next year when we turn 100.
So when is the convention?
The convention itself is going to run March 11th through March 14th. The day of training is Tuesday, March 13th. And it's appropriately titled, as Pat noted, Federal Managers Doing More with Less, since that's what we're all faced with right now. We really couldn't find a better theme for the day.
Do you have to be an FMA member, Todd, to attend?
You do not. In fact, we encourage everyone around the country, as you said, to attend. It's geared toward managers, certainly, supervisors, managers, and executives who have to deal with the ever-tightening budgets right now and trying to figure out how to continue to accomplish the missions they're charged with fewer resources.
And of course, those people are all very busy and are going to, you know, they're going to have to start planning to get away that one day so that they can be much more effective in getting their job done for the rest of the year and next year and the year after and however long this budget crunch continues. How does somebody sign up?
I would recommend they go to our website, www.fedmanagers.org. On the front page, you'll see a link to
Fed Managers with an S.
You got it. Fed Managers, F-E-D, Managers with an S.org. And it'll take you to a link that'll give you more information about the whole convention and also specifically the training day and give you a chance to register there as well. So,
okay. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with the Federal Managers Association. We're talking about their annual convention. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the top problems that federal managers are facing. When we return, we'll be joined by Casey Wilson of Management Concepts, one of the trainers set to offer a session at the Federal Managers Association's convention. And we're going to learn more about that training right after this.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, your host, and I would like to offer my special appreciation for Pat Niehaus, FMA's president, for being with us during the first session of our show. She has to get back to all of her important HR duties in California, and we still have Todd Wells and Jesse Clement in the studio. But now I'd like to welcome Casey Wilson of Management Concepts. Casey, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. And so you're going to be training at the FMA convention. And tell us what you're going to talk about.
Sure. Well, as you've been talking about on the show here, a lot of the managers and supervisors out there are feeling the pressure and the pinch of having to do more with less. And so it often results in more anxiety, more stress, more tension. And sometimes that can decrease the performance for both themselves and their teams. And so the session that I'll do is actually going to help supervisors and managers figure out ways to not buckle under that pressure or maintain the status quo, but rather actually work through some of these challenges in a proactive way to actually get better results.
You have any ideas? It seems like overwhelming to me. You know, as agencies say, you can't do this, and you can't do that because we don't have any money.
Sure. Yeah. Why don't I share a couple of quick examples? A bit of a teaser for what we'll do at the convention. For example, one of the things that often changes for organizations and for supervisors are the priorities during times like this. And so while the mission still remains the same, supervisors can focus on re-clarifying the most current priorities and help employees ensure that they're focused on spending their time with the highest priority items. And so oftentimes, of course, we maintain the status quo, and we kind of we keep carrying on as we've always carried on. And simply recalibrating those priorities can help ensure that employees are spending their time on the most important activities.
What happens though when you that most important activity, you know, you prioritized it, but the other things still need to be done also, and you've got the inspector general, you've got the higher level senior executives, you've got Congress all saying, why didn't this get done?
Sure. Well, this is where I think the pragmatism comes in of what's realistic and what's appropriate and accomplishable. So, well, that's just one example. I think getting clear on those priorities helps at least understand what should be done first and or in what order these the most important things would be accomplished. So it's not the only thing, but I think that until you know where you're focused, you're going to be spread pretty far. And So just it's one part of the element.
So Casey, that sounds good. Tell us a little bit about your background, why you have the expertise and the knowledge to offer this advice to managers.
Sure. Well, and certainly that was just one example. So in my role, I work in management concepts, as you mentioned, and we're a training and performance improvement consulting company that's been helping the federal space for about 40 years here for leadership, management, and supervisory training. For the last 15 years, I've served in and worked in a learning and development and organizational development role that has really put me on the front lines working with federal managers, supervisors, leaders, and helping create leadership development programs, management development programs, and supervisory development programs. So besides really being with those folks that are having to do the work, have been able to create and construct programs and learning experiences, and have authored a few books and helping people do this. So my background really is nestled between both the work of supervision and leadership development, and actually the practice of helping people learn how to do it better.
Yeah, I've got in my outline on what you're going to talk about, Casey, I have an interesting bullet point that has been presented to me, which I think is a good thing for us to talk about that really can make a difference in times like this. You're talking about reclarifying expectations in case of perceptions about what is expected has strayed or evolved. And I think that very often happens. Things stray, they evolve away from their original intent. Sometimes the original intent has evolved, so you no longer need programs. And it's kind of just taking a look at the organization and getting the, and I like to use the word negatively, the bureaucracy, and I mean that as something that's unnecessary, getting the bureaucracy out so that you can work more effectively. And I have that down as one of your points. Can you amplify on that a little bit?
Sure, happy to. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that I think people are, in all of my experiences with working with federal managers, they're very well intended and oftentimes focused on the things that, because they were either suggested or told at one point in time that this is a key priority. But I think being able to step back and look at the landscape of work and clarify, is this program or this set of activities still most important, is really a key responsibility of managers, and being able to help their employees translate that into what they do on a day-to-day basis.
And sometimes there are just things that people spend their time doing that are totally unnecessary, and taking a critical look at that might be a very good task for a federal manager. Do you have ideas on how a very busy manager might take the time to take a look at what they're doing that's not necessary?
Sure. Well,
that's work itself.
It is. It's an investment. And so I think one of the things that I hear a lot of is, I'm too busy to stop. I'm too busy to actually pay attention to that. I've just got to keep getting the work done. And I think that belief doesn't necessarily serve managers very well. I think literally carving out an hour a week to put out on the table, for example, what are the key priorities, and arrange them and say, if I had to stop doing one thing so that I could really do something else better, what would it be? And holding the line, asking that tough question and saying, what would be the thing? And I think taking the time, making an hour each week, it's a small percentage of time, but when you have that clarity as a manager and you can pass that down to your folks that you work with and collaborate with, the efficiencies and the scalability of that can be really profound.
And so the other, you were listening on the phone when Pat Niehaus was talking about her role in the National Council for Federal Labor Management Relations, and how important is it to get the union involved in that? Because some managers feel like the union's an impediment. Other managers have used them effectively, and one of the purposes of the council is to improve labor management relations, to make managers and unions get along better so that everything's more productive. Do you find that is an important thing that managers do, to actually work with the labor union as well as their employees?
Well, at the end of the day, I think when we have challenging times like we do now with this budget situation, I think all ideas should be welcome ideas regardless of where they come from. And I think finding the best channels, and some of them are working with the unions and also working with management as well. But I think those two organizations coming together to find the highest leverage ways to get the work done is a key factor for success here.
And especially because it seems like the labor unions would have an interest in that because they want their organization to operate efficiently because you want to keep as many jobs as you can and keep them moving forward.
I think, focusing on the real work and the real challenge, and I think dropping the bureaucracy is a really key piece of it. You mentioned it earlier. And I think getting people to really focus on how they can effectively and most efficiently help accomplish the mission, and it's without regard to the walls that get put up, unfortunately, sometimes on either side. So we're focusing on the problem and not the people or the quote-unquote camp in which they sit would be really a good start.
So, Casey, a lot of the attendees at this FMA convention are going to be first and second level supervisors, maybe some third level supervisors, but a lot of first and second level supervisors out there on the front lines, and they're going to hear you talk about how to work effectively with their subordinates, maybe with the labor union, the wisdom of doing that in these times. What about their bosses? I mean, it's their bosses that really control the policy, the budget. Do you have any ideas for how these first and second level supervisors can convince their bosses that they're doing the very best they can with their limited resources? And how important is that?
Well, I think we all need support. No matter what level of the organization we are in, we all need buy-in. We all need people to help advocate and go to bat for us. And I think supervisors and managers at every level are well served by figuring out how to help their supervisors help them. And so I think we'll talk about a couple of practices that they can employ to help influence and manage up. And frankly, I think getting out of generalizations and innuendos around work and workload and capacity, generalizations seem to get in the way, I think, from my experience, and getting really concrete with what our productivities are, where our efficiencies are, and taking an honest look and talking about that with one's supervisor can say, here's what we're doing really well, but here's what we can improve. Here's where I need your help to make it happen. Those are sometimes difficult but also very necessary conversations about owning how good one's team is working, but then also finding viable solutions.
Okay, and I would note Casey Wilson from Management Concepts will be on the program March 13th, that's a Tuesday, at the FMA Managers Association's training seminar. You can sign up at fedmanagers.org. Casey's course is called 7 Quick Fixes for Enhancing Performance, Expertly Leading Your Team with Limited Resources. So you have 7 quick fixes. We've talked in general about a couple of them. Could you give us, we have time for just one more, Casey, before we have to take the next break. Could you give us one more?
Sure. I'll give you a good example. How about, working on strengths? A lot of times we get locked in into what a person's position is as opposed to what their capabilities are. And one way that managers can help gain more efficiencies and help get more done is to look at where people are really strong in and not be bound by simply positions, but look at where people are good and strong, because strength often is about efficiency and effectiveness, and the more we can play to people's strengths, give them assignments that they're already well positioned to be successful in, typically the more efficient they are. And we'll talk a lot more about that actually in the session, but playing to people's strengths can have a lot of benefits and values, both for productivity, but also engagement.
Okay, I hear a lot of concern by federal managers and executives about the limited resources, the cuts in the budget. How optimistic are you, Casey, that this is that the government's going to be able to work well with these limited resources?
Well, working well, I think they can work well. I'm optimistic that they can, and I think it's about thinking about how to work differently and trying some new ways out. And when one thinks differently and one gets around the problem in a different way, I think that there can be some real effectiveness and some real efficiency. So I'm optimistic, and I'm optimistic that the folks attending the session at the convention are going to get some really practical things that they can use immediately back on the job. So it should be a really exciting convention.
Okay. And of course, Casey is not the only speaker. We're going to hear from Jason Milton in the next segment of our show. Casey, thank you very much for being with us here on Fed Talk this morning. We really appreciate it. Sign up for the FMA Federal Managers Conventions, Federal Managers Association Convention, and you can hear Casey's 7 quick fixes for enhancing performance. We have to stop here to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jason Milton of Gallup to discuss his training during the FMA convention. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For 2 decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Well, welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, your host. And last segment, we heard from Casey Wilson. We're now going to be joined by Jason Milton of Gallup. Jason, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity.
And it's good to have you here. And I know you're going to be one of the speakers on at the FMA convention on March 13th. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about.
Sure. At a high level, we're going to talk about what the importance of focusing on employee engagement. So really that gets into the work environment that managers create within the federal government and why that's important, what sort of outcomes that can lead to. So you mentioned in the last caller talking about budget cuts and how that might impact people. Could this be a strategy for managers to implement in terms of the old adage of doing more with less, getting more productivity with either fewer employees or less resources, fewer resources at hand? And also employee well-being, what that means, why the government should care about it, what does that actually correlate to as far as hard outcomes? And then we'll bring it down even a little level and talk about specifically some of the research that we've done comparing the government workers with the private sector, looking at how they stack up in the specific area of the supervisor direct report relationship.
Oh, I'd like to hear about that, Jason.
Too.
I'm very curious, especially we could start with whether federal supervisors are higher or lower paid than private sector supervisors. That seems to be the big
the
political
topic du jour.
That's not what Jason's
the big political
about,
debate. But that was meant to be a joke. But as an aside, tell us what your research shows about the difference.
Sure, absolutely. So what we see at a high level is that overall, federal government employees actually do quite well from a well-being standpoint. And we define well-being, I should pause there, because it's very broad. Typically, people think of well-being simply as health and fitness. And that's certainly a component of it. But we look at it, actually, a very broad definition, looking at from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, and we look at overall life evaluation, physical well-being, emotional well-being, healthy behaviors, and this is key, the work environment, and then the basic access that a person has to things like health care, clean and safe drinking water, affordable fruits and vegetables, those types of things. The reason why we do that is because while we like to talk quite a bit about this notion of work-life balance, that sort of implies that there's this separating line between work and life, work and your personal life. And frankly, that's really not true. If you just think about your own life, if you have a great day at work or a lousy day at work, usually that'll carry over to your experiences with your family, and vice versa. If you're having just some family troubles, some personal troubles, it makes it difficult to focus there at work. And so while we don't assume that or even expect any managers or organizations to completely own the well-being of their employees, there's a lot that they can actually do to help boost that. And it's not simply from an altruistic motivation that this is the right thing to do for people. As a manager, as a leader or organization, that actually results in very strong business outcomes. So, for example, what you'll see in the federal government space, and actually in the private sector too, you'll see higher productivity, you'll see fewer sick days being taken, less turnover, which can really sink budgets.
Jason, would you tell Congress about those?
Yeah. It would really help me out, Jason.
That's interesting that there are fewer sick days in federal workplaces.
Well,
turnover.
Those aren't specific. That's in general when you improve well-being. So
that's when you improve well-being.
Yeah, and so now when we looked at right now, we're in the process of actually getting more specific data points on that. But that was just from the benefits of well-being overall. Now, when we did our private sector, public sector comparisons, what we did find is that overall, federal employees tend to have higher well-being. But when you break that down a little bit until you look into the career well-being, there's one area that government really struggles with and lags behind the non-government workers, and that's particularly with the supervisor-direct report relationship. So we have three questions that really get into defining what is a worker, or categorizing how a worker's well-being is. But one question that really stood out was we just asked our respondents if their supervisor treats them more like a boss or a partner. And what we saw was about half, 51% of federal workers said that their supervisor treats them more like a partner. But 58% of non-government workers said that. So it was higher for the non-government. So what that implies is that within the government structure, you have more of a top-down, subservient, sort of the old-style management of subordination with it. When you dive into that data even more, you see it coming out in particular age groups, so really in the mid-career area there. So in age 30 to 44, that was the biggest gap between federal workers and non-government workers. And we saw a 9% gap there with federal workers saying only 49% of them saying that their supervisor treats them more like a partner versus 58% of the non-government workers. So I think that's an opportunity there when you talk about, especially if we're struggling, as you mentioned in the last call, with budget cuts or lack of resources, a lot of stuff we can't control. But we absolutely can control the way that we treat our employees and the way we structure our organization and what our culture is there.
So Jason, how can a federal manager learn the skill of effectively managing by treating their subordinates more like a partner than a boss?
Well, I think, first of all, they have to buy into it themselves. And so what I mean, again, is what we can do is we can show, and there's lots of data out there, not just the Gallups, that can show that the benefits of creating a more partnership environment. So you can encourage that buy-in by saying that, look, we could actually save budget. We don't have as much turnover. People want to come here. They'll be more productive. They'll be higher performing. So once they've bought into that, then that creates that interest of doing exactly what you just described. What do I need to do to learn? The most important thing is to actually be intentional and be open with your team there. So you don't want to secretly try to create this culture. You want to announce that this is important from the leadership on down, from at the highest level of the agencies to the managers who have smaller work groups and the individual contributors, and say, we are changing our culture. We want to know about your opinion. We want to partner with you. We want to set you up in the right position to use your strengths, as Casey was just saying in the last call. And we need to be very open about that and then invite them to share how they think they would like to see that happen. So that way you really, one, create buy-in from the whole team where everybody's contributing their thoughts, but you're also creating a shared accountability. So as a team, we've made this decision to move forward. As a team, we've created these ways that we can create a more partnering environment. So let's be held accountable as a team. Are we actually following through on all of these? So I think being direct and being very open and intentional to start with is the key there. And there's also some other strategies that we'll get into at the training, where we can talk about some of the other ways that managers, very practical ways that they can walk out doing right away with their teams.
Yeah, we don't want to give away your whole presentation, obviously. People need to come to the conference to hear everything. But what about telework? You know, how important is telework in creating this healthy environment, how you feel about your job?
Well, it's so vital. I mean, different organizations do teleworking for different reasons. I think it's important to note that every worker is an individual and feels differently about it. While some people, it may actually boost their engagement because they'd be able to either be home quicker with their families or whatnot. Some, we see this particularly with the younger folks, that actually can't hurt them because work also becomes one of their social outlets. You know, so now they're downtown or they're with some other people there. So the important thing to do is to not lose sight of still trying, whether virtually or any other way possible, to still create this team atmosphere to where, even though I'm teleworking, I still feel like I can communicate with my teams. And I also, this is crucial, I also feel like I have an open door, even if that's a virtual door, an open door to my manager. One thing that we see time and time again, and this isn't unique to the government sector, this is in the private sector as well, is this idea, this style of management where if you don't hear from me, you're doing fine. That's actually one of the worst ways that you can possibly manage someone, is just to completely ignore them. So you can see that the danger of that could even be greater with teleworking, because I don't have that physical presence with you. I have to be even more intentional to get you on video or to get you on the phone or however else I'm going to engage you.
So it's a real obligation for the manager to make sure that they engage the employee. It's interesting, ever since the Employee Viewpoint Survey, now called the Employee Viewpoint Survey, what it used to be called before, has been around. That's the key thing to success. The higher ranked agencies are the ones that do a better job, leaders do a better job of engaging the employees.
Absolutely. And not just engaging them in formal appointments, but really creating that culture to where, yes, we're not scheduled to meet right now, but if something's on your mind, I will take the time to meet with you. You know, if I can stop what I'm doing right now, I will. And if not, I'll certainly get back to you as soon as I can.
So, Jason, your program, which is on in the morning of the FMA convention on March 13th, is called Improving Employee Productivity and Well-Being Through Healthier Workplace Relationships. And we've talked a little bit about that. But I have to tell you, the lawyer in me looks at healthier workplace relationships and it says, you know, get rid of all the disgruntled employees, the poor performers, the problem employees. But you're not looking at it quite from that perspective, I take it.
No, absolutely not. Now, I mean, yes, there are employees that do need to be escorted out, but that's really a last step that should be taken. Part of it, what we find many times, is it comes down to this idea of fit. So in other words, where I may have hired you for one job, but now for whatever reason I've had to shift you over to something different, and maybe you're not performing that well, or maybe you're disgruntled, the problem may not necessarily be you solely. It could be that we have you slotted into a position that doesn't fit your talents. We really see this at the manager level. Many times you might have just a stellar individual contributor who's highly technical and has done an excellent job throughout his or her career. And then through just people's progression, what they have in their mind is that, oh, you need to be bumped up to management. So they promote these people because they've done a fantastic job into a management position without taking truly an objective audit of the person's skills and to find out, one, do you even want to manage people? And two, is that even fit your skill set? Because just because you've been a stellar individual contributor doesn't necessarily mean that you will be excellent at managing these individual contributors. So while it's easy to just label someone as low performing or as disgruntled, an important step, and this is incumbent upon supervisors in the organizational structure, to figure out, do I even have this person in the right fit to begin with, or am I setting him or her up to fail?
And the problem is, the real challenge for that frontline, well, higher level managers too, is that when that person gets to the top of their working level, they're not in management yet. They want to be in management because that's how they make more money, and yet they may not necessarily have the aptitude. They may be miserable once they get there. And the real skill for managers is persuading this person that they have value at the working level and being able to reward them at that level. Did you talk about that at all?
We will. It's one thing that we talk about, and this is a very tough organizational shift for many, again, government and in the private sector, that idea of doing a better job of embracing the people for the roles that they're in. You mentioned legal. The legal field, the way that law firms are set up, is actually a great example of it. If you think about it, from the moment you graduate law school and you take your first position in a firm, fast forward down 30 years and you're a partner and you're working on these fantastic cases, you're still essentially doing the same role. You're still working on cases. Now, as you progress in your expertise, you're working on more difficult cases, you're given more responsibility and you're training and developing. But the legal field does an excellent job of still making of paying you more, recognizing you more, giving you the credit for doing a great job within still that same basic role without this feeling of, well, now I want to ditch working on these cases and I purely want to manage people all the time and that's the only way that I can get the recognition that I want. You see that even in public schools where teachers then want to become assistant principals or principals because that's how they move up, even though they have zero desire or maybe even aptitude to want to run their own school.
It's one of those real challenges for the federal system, and how do you keep those people motivated? How do you convince them that they have value? Somebody who is a great, great technician, but you just know in your heart that they're going to not be a very good manager, but you like them as a person, you want to reward them, so you make that bad decision. So it's one that perhaps managers should all get a handle on and figure out ways to deal with that. Jason, I would love to talk about this more, but I really want our listeners to sign up for the convention and hear the rest of your story on March 13th. So thank you very, very much for being with us here this morning on Fed Talk. It's been great talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we'll talk to Jesse and Todd from the Federal Managers Association about some of the legislative issues and also a little bit more about the convention. We'll be right back.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is the last segment of our show. Please give us a call if you want to add your 2 cents. Talk about some of those issues that we've been discussing or ask a question. We still have Todd Wells, the Executive Director of FMA, and Jesse Clement, Government Affairs Director from FMA, in the studio to talk about these issues that are important to federal manager. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333. Or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Jesse, you know, you're a regular here, not only on Fed Talk, but on Federal News Radio, and you've been in the studio, and you've hardly said anything, and that's very unlike you.
I'm shy.
To give you a few minutes to talk about you're shy.
I am.
We all know that's not true. So talk for a few minutes about some of the key legislative things that come across your bailiwick.
Well, I don't even know where to begin because there's so many of them, so how do you choose? But FMA puts together its legislative agenda every year in advance of our convention for our membership's approval. And this year we took a much different approach than we have in years past because a lot of the things we've been consistently pushing on Capitol Hill, management training, FICA reform, equity between employees and retirees and employees in the private sector and the public sector aren't at the forefront of the minds of members of Congress right now. So we've taken the approach of it's most important for FMA right now to do whatever it can to prevent some of these negative changes to federal employees' pay and benefits from going through Congress.
And so far, you had one little success with the Social Security issue that just a week or two ago you kept there was an original proposal to actually have current federal employees pay more into FERS, and at least the change that was made would only affect future federal employees who would take their federal job knowing that they would have to pay more for their FERS benefit.
Unfortunately, while I think that is a best case scenario, but it still puts federal employees on the pay for issue. I think the payroll tax holiday bill, which the president signed into law yesterday, I believe, sets a really dangerous precedent in Congress by saying, well, oh, I have to pay for this bill. It costs $40 billion. Well, let's just make new federal employees contribute more to their pension plans. Then they know what they're getting into. They know what they're signing up for. Let's just use them. I'm really nervous about the slippery slope legislation like that will create.
Well, not only simply because it affects future federal employees, but it's the idea that we need to pay for something. Let's do it on the backs of federal employees. And once the door is opened, it can happen again. But I would like our listeners to know that as a result of your efforts and the efforts of those that you work with and other employee groups and organizations, which are relentless, so far, all of these threats have not yet materialized, with the few minor exceptions being the pay freeze, which we're in the last year of, subject to changes by Congress, and the recent change where new employees starting in 2013 will have to pay more into FERS.
And
that's good.
So far, I think our efforts have paid off. The federal employee community has been very vocal in combating some of the negative attitudes towards federal employees on Capitol Hill. We haven't seen any major changes coming down the pike. However, we have legislation that's going to be introduced to prevent sequestration. We have 9 months left of the year in an election year at that to prevent massive cuts to federal agency budgets, especially at the Department of Defense. And there's already been legislation introduced which would prevent sequestration at DOD by extending the pay freeze, by changing the retirement contributions, by reducing the size of the federal workforce by X percentage over X number of years. So I don't think the payroll tax holiday is the last we've seen. The Senate and House still need to release their budgets for fiscal year 2013. I feel we'll see some changes to federal retirements in those bills as well.
And I know Jesse will work very, very hard keeping her eye on all of this legislation, doing whatever can be done to make sure that the least damage is done to the benefits and of federal employees. And we work very hard on changing the public perception, which, of course, is driving some of the political reaction, the public perception of federal employees.
And misinformation as well. There's so much misinformation out there about federal employees.
Tell us about that, Jesse.
Well,
like the USA Today article.
Dennis, I hope you're listening.
Didn't they quote you?
They did. They do a few times. I've gone back and forth with that columnist frequently about the negative perception. CBO just came out with a report that says federal employees on average make more in total compensation than their private sector counterparts. But it's really, really hard to have an apples-to-apples comparison with, 2 million feds and 160 million working Americans. There's a great discrepancy. Not every job that exists in the private sector exists in the public.
But it's also interesting about that study that was just released that the higher paid employees, the technically advanced employees, the professional employees actually made less than their private sector counterparts.
And I don't think that's going to come as a huge surprise to anyone. The federal government has a pay scale that only allows most employees to get paid a certain amount of money no matter what job they do. That simply doesn't exist in the private sector.
So, and I would like to say one other thing to our listeners, to make sure that all those FERS employees out there understand, especially if you're planning on having a career as a federal employee and retiring, that Jesse Clement is largely responsible for leading a team that got the legislation through Congress, the last major benefit that federal employees have received from Congress, which is to give retirement credit for unused FERS sick leave. So it's something Jesse's very proud of, and she's working hard now for another opportunity to have to do something good for federal employees. Yes. But all her efforts have been recently preventing the negative from happening that you all read about in the newspapers.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. We consistently let folks know that FMA was one of the driving forces of getting that first sick leave credit through Congress. I am very proud of the work FMA did to make sure that happens. And unfortunately, we're not in 2009 anymore.
Yeah, and remember that the reason the FERS sick leave passed is because FERS employees were using their sick leave at a much, much higher rate than CSRS employees.
Yes.
As they approached retirement. And it became a manager's challenge to deal with these FERS employees who were using sick leave at a very high rate. And so that challenge will, I think, and some of the things that Jason talked about, mm-hmm. creating a productive workforce and using less sick leave, I immediately thought of FERS sick leave when he said that. And we've improved the structure to make this greater productivity take place.
There's already been discussion of dropping that.
We're going to talk about that time. It was a brief discussion. It's gone
your
away.
Point is well taken, that they've already forgotten that it was actually a management tool that we were trying to get more out of our employees in a productive way, positive way. So
Todd, we've had two of your great presenters on at your convention on our show. You have some other great speakers lined up. Tell us a little bit about who else will be there and what people can expect if they sign up for your training day.
Training Day, which is open to all managers and supervisors across the government. It's a one day of FMA's 3-day convention. This day of training is a fantastic day of training with six different panels. You do not have to be an FMA member to attend.
Right. We mentioned that before.
Very good.
So who else is going to be there, Todd?
We're going to have Anthony Gagliardo. He's with the Federal Aviation Administration, and he led a team of managers that led to much greater efficiencies across the nation in a formerly non-centralized arrangement. He actually has an article in the Federal Manager this past winter, the winter issue, and that's what brought him to our attention and made him realize that it would be something that we would like to share with everyone. We have Tyler Robinson and David Uehio from the Young Government Leaders. They're officers. Actually, Dave is the president, and Tyler is the public affairs officer for the Young Government Leaders. That's an organization that is getting more and more formalized. These are two folks that are presidential management fellows who work in the D.C. area and have really taken the organization to a new level and are working with the Federal Managers Association to try to make sure that the folks at their younger age understand the avenues open to them, hopefully working toward more mentorship in the office. And they're going to be talking about developing the leaders of tomorrow while maximizing productivity today. It's a great thing for our folks who tend to be more in the lines of a 20 to 30-year career manager to hear from some younger folks who have some different ideas about technology and just bring a different perspective to us. We'll have Doris Brown and Sandra Edmonds from Aview Technologies. These are folks that we work with throughout the year, and they will be discussing how to decisively address conduct-related issues. This is one of the tougher topics we'll have as far as when you actually have to discipline folks and take that last step that we don't want to take. And finally, we'll finish the day off with making your organization a great place to work, keeping up morale. This is a panel discussion that actually Casey Wilson will be on as well. And after all the things we've talked about today, you can imagine how that might be something that managers are struggling to figure out how to
it's
do.
It's very important, keeping up morale. I hear stories, and then I see sometimes that federal employees are recognize the reality of the situation, and they're just trying, most of them, to do the very best they can under the circumstances. And I think helping people keep that morale is immensely important. Okay, real quick, you sign up for the conference?
Real quick, Tuesday, March 13th, Federal Managers Doing More With Less. That's the training day, and it's going to be held in Arlington, Virginia at the DoubleTree Crystal City Hotel.
All right. You can go to federalmanagers.org, and that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.